Hello, everybody. Welcome into episode 8 of the Good Take podcast. Alex Hutton and Zevin Schuster joining you as always. And today we are joined by Orlando Watkins, the head men's basketball coach at Oakland High School, a private trainer, a travel coach, probably best known to NBA fans as Damian Lillard's high school coach for 2 seasons. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
No problem, fellas. Anytime.
I know. Thank you for coming on. We just wanted to start off by asking, like, what has it been like to be a coach in the coronavirus era? You know, what is it like giving, you know, tips over Zoom? I mean, do you fear maybe players, you know, having some, you know, loss of skills? Like, how has it been to just coach people like remotely?
It has been a challenge, to say the least, but it's been a challenge that I think we've done a pretty good job of conquering. So as far as my high school team, once they shut down the gyms, we couldn't go in the gym, be with our kids or anything. So what we started roughly about a month and a half ago is once Governor Newsom allowed outdoor workout, we started our kids doing strength and conditioning out, working on footwork, core work, and speed and agility. So they've been doing that 3 times a week. Social distancing, mandatory, mask on, taking temperatures and everything. We haven't had, knocking on wood, anybody get sick. And that's been going very well. And then with our AAU program, we did Zoom training for the first 2 months. And we lost a couple of kids because it's hard to dribble, watching us dribble, and then we're not able to give that feedback instantaneous. So a couple of kids dropped off. But once again, when we opened up our outdoor workout, we allowed kids to meet us at a park. And we've been working those kids out. And it's been going great. Parents love it because parents are like, my kid is driving me crazy. I'm stuck in the house with him all day. But when we come here, he's so happy and he has less energy. So I have a good night's sleep. And so, you know, it's been fun for us to keep working with the kids and then overcoming those challenges. But at the end of the day, we're doing what's best for the kids and for the country by doing the social distancing and not being in large groups. And we're used to having 5 teams, and now we only have 3 workouts a day. I mean, 3 workouts during the weekend. So that's a big change for us.
And sort of with this sort of new, with these new training styles and kind of everything you've kind of learned doing it this way, what do you recommend for players who maybe don't have, you know, the same access to training equipment and materials that they normally do?
It's funny. I was watching NBA television 3 weeks ago, and it was just a clip of a commercial by Isaiah Thomas said, if basketball players come out of this quarantine and they're not better dribblers, there's something wrong with it. Because everybody can get a ball, get to a driveway, even go to a park. There might not be a rim there, but you can practice dribbling moves. You know, you can get it off. NBA TV had at-home workouts, get it off the internet. But as long as you have a ball and, I say, 6 feet of concrete, work on dribbling. If you're lucky enough to have a rim at home, you can work on your left hand and left, right hand layups, work on jumpers, form shooting, things like that. That's the best thing to do. I have kids that are in high school that are actually going to gyms and playing 5-on-5 basketball right now. And I'm telling them, like, what are you doing? It's not even working. What are you getting out of that? I don't think people realize risk versus reward. Granted, you're playing against people and it's going to make you better. But if you get sick or, God forbid, you are asymptomatic and then you take it home to your mom and dad or grandma and they get sick, was that game really worth what can happen in the future? And I don't think these kids get it. I think the country did a very poor job of saying who's at risk with COVID, because once you tell a 21-year-old, oh, you're not at risk, you know, they're going to be like, I'm going to live life like normal. And you tell a 16-year-old the same thing, even a 25-year-old, they're living life like normal, but they might be asymptomatic. Now they give it to somebody else. Now you influence other people's lives. So I think they should just say everybody's at risk and just let them go.
Yeah, so I did want to ask about sort of, you know, A, like, have you learned anything new about yourself in coaching because of like what you just mentioned? And B, I mean, obviously, you know, one of the jobs of a youth coach is, you know, not only to coach, you know, basketball skills, but also help, you know, young boys and girls become, you know, like grownups. So how has that sort of been sort of adjusted? And how have you found yourself trying to, you know, deal with immaturity and, you know, learning about yourself as a coach kind of in the, throughout this whole process?
I think every day I learn about myself as a coach even more and more. So I just got off the phone with a dad, with one of the kids from our AAU team, and I was telling him a story. He's like, that's why I want my kid around you, because you're a high character guy and you do what's right with the kids. And I think that's what our program is about, the Oklahoma High program and the Wildcats program, our AAU program. And we try to pass it on to our kids. I mean, I'm a basketball coach, but I'm also a teacher. I like to think of that way. I'm a teacher of life skills. My high school kids, for the last month, I've been telling them, hey, fellas, go to sleep early because school's going to start back August the 10th. And I guarantee you it's not going to be the same Zoom that you had when school ended. Because when school ended, Zoom teaching was like, all right, I'm on air. I'm not going to show my face. Now, teachers are going to hold you accountable. They want to see your face in Zoom. They want you to turn in work daily. So I'm trying to get them ready to go back to school. I think a lot of my kids, since you mentioned immaturity, are just going to be like, oh, it's the same as last time. And I keep warning them, no, it's not going to be the same. I talked to my principal. He's like, no, they're going to have to be on Zoom. We're going to take attendance. If they're not there, it'll factor into their grades. So that's what I would say to that answer. Right there.
Yeah, and also sort of going back to the, like, you know, restarting sports and playing in gyms and that sort of thing, you know, there's been a lot of debate about that. Different states are taking different measures. Like, what's your opinion on restarting high school sports? What will it take for you to feel safe and for you to feel safe for your players? And how do you sort of balance the sort of the need for the kids to be safe against the fact that, you know, schools where they get a lot of really important resources, I mean, you need something as simple as food.
First of all, I think that basketball, high school football, all should happen if it is safe. The problem is, what is safe? I keep telling my friends, they are like, you guys are going to have a season. I'm like, yeah, it's supposed to start on this day. But the first kid that comes up sick or the first kid that has a cold or might be allergy, I got to tell him, hey, you got to leave practice. And then I'm going to have to report to somebody probably, so-and-so had to leave practice because he was sneezing or coughing or he had a fever. And now they're going to say, okay, well, that kid has to be quarantined. Well, that kid might be the best player on my team. He might be the 16th best player on my team. I don't want to lose any of my kids. And then once he goes out, they're going to go back and trace who has he been hanging around with. And now, okay, those four players have to be quarantined. Well, they didn't have any symptoms. Well, they still have to be quarantined. So I think that as much as I want them to play ASAP, I think we should have a vaccine or better treatment than we do right now for the kids. Because this thing is hurting a lot of people. And like everybody's saying right now, you don't know the long-term effect. They don't know how you're going to feel 5 years from now. Are your lungs going to be the same? Or do they deteriorate over those 5 years? So, I definitely want them back. I definitely think we need to make sure that it's safe before they come back. As of right now, we're supposed to start March 17th, and then the season will run all the way through to when school is over. State championship is supposed to be in June. So I think that's good that they pushed out basketball that far, but football is supposed to start in January. Well, guess what season January is? Flu and COVID season. And it's outdoor sports where it's rain. So now, as much as it impacts basketball, imagine on a football program, if five kids have a cold, and it could just be a common cold. You can't treat it as a common cold. You have to treat it as COVID, unless they want to go in and get that test, which a lot of these kids, adults don't like taking the test. Imagine what a kid's going to feel like with it up their nose or down their throat.
So I was curious too, as another follow-up to that, you know, you mentioned that even if someone, you know, if it's your best player, you might have to, you know, obviously do what's best for them. I personally am curious, do you think other coaches are going to have that approach? I've said for a while now, you know, like if LeBron tests positive for COVID before game 7 of the finals, I'm sorry. I know the NBA has been really good throughout this. There's just no way you can convince me that they're going to quarantine LeBron before like the biggest game of the season. And you're right. I mean, I don't think that's unreasonable. You know, I mean, do you think other coaches will like heed your approach, or are you worried about maybe sort of maybe other coaches taking their approach of some of your kids who are playing 5-on-5? You know what I mean?
First and foremost, we don't want to jinx the NBA. They're doing a great job right now. I'm being entertained right now. You're being entertained right now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
To the point, do I think the Lakers or the NBA would let LeBron be benched with a positive COVID test? I would hope so. Now
that's
their character. I personally have suspended some of my best players for something far less than having COVID for a playoff game. So I know I wouldn't do that because it's bigger than just that one play. And I would hope that other coaches are like that, but let's be honest, some of these other coaches aren't like that. So that's another fear that I have for my kids. We might be doing right, and we might test and we're all negative, but now I have to put my hands into other people that I don't know their character. And so that goes back to the previous question of, do you want it to happen? Yeah, but I got to make sure all the protocols are in place to protect my kids and me at the same time.
Nice. So you obviously just are sort of getting to sort of like the habits you try and instill in your kids, you know, being strict with them, trying to teach them discipline, even if it's just like, you know, getting up early and being on Zoom. So, I mean, Alex and I are both curious, like what kind of habits, both on and off the court, do you try to instill in your players from an early age? We saw an interview with Dame where he said that you like didn't let him play because he forgot to bring his sneakers to a game. And then we also were curious, you know, do you maybe coach different players differently? Like, for instance, since Dame had such potential, obviously, you know, did you coach him harder or were you more strict with him? How do you sort of go about instilling habits in players, and does it sort of change based on who the player you're sort of interacting with?
With all my kids, whether it's high school or my AAU program, we instill discipline. Now, of course, the non-high school kids, it's a little different discipline than the high school kids. But number one is to be on time. Number two is to be respectful. Number three is to do the right thing more often than not. Those are the three things that we try to teach our kids across the board. And then as far as every coach says, I coach every player the same. It's a lie. I've been on teams when I was the worst player. I've been on teams that were one of the best players. You don't coach your players all the same. You have rules that are in place, and those rules are steadfast. But as far as for Dame, for example, when he came to us, Dame had, I wouldn't say bad habits, but he didn't do certain things that we required on the court. And we like to take a lot of charges. And Dame missed two charges, and I sat him. This was a summer league game, Mike. So now this is a game that is not for a championship, but we're trying to set that standard that if we want a championship, this is what you need to do. And we were playing against a defending state championship team, as a matter of fact. I won't say who it is because when I finish the story, I have a lot of respect for the coach, but I don't want it to get back to him. So Dame blew two charges. I sat him. And in the summer league, they only have first half and second half. We're getting late to the second half, and he's looking at me like, can I go in? And I look at him like, are you going to take charge? Yes, I'm going to take a charge. I'll take a charge if it's here. We put him in the game, and I'm not making this up. It came down to Dame taking a charge right before the horn to win the game. And he took the charge, and we won the game. And the coach, before the previous timeout, said, we don't lose the teams like this because we're an inner-city team. We're supposed to not be disciplined. And realistically, Dame wasn't disciplined the two previous times where he didn't take the charge. But he got up this time, took the charge, and won the game. And I think it set the tone for our next 2 years as a program. But we did pretty good those 2 years. And for Dame, he's been a guy, before he gave to us, that he was always a stand-up guy. But now it was like on the basketball court, I got to hold myself to that standard because my teammates do. You can't be the best player on the team and you don't take charges, but everybody else takes charges. Because they're going to be like, well, if he don't do it, I don't have to. So I just said to that person, if you're going to be that dude, you got to take charges. And that's what we do.
And so, you know, obviously sticking with Dame a little bit, you know, we obviously the last handful of years, you know, Dame along with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, have obviously been at the forefront of a three-point bonanza, like revolution. One thing that I was wanted to hear your thoughts on, you know, obviously I think it was on Christmas in like 2016 maybe, Mark Jackson had said, you know, oh, like Steph Curry is hurting the game because now everyone goes into gyms and just, you know, chucks up threes nonstop. Is that something that you see, and is that something that you have to, you know, be on kids about, like, no, you're not Steph, you're not Dame, like you need to actually work on this instead? Like how often and how prevalent is that sort of just go and chuck up narrative? Is it like, is that as true as people make it out to be, do you think?
I don't think it's as true as people make it out to be. I think, and somebody else asked me this question too, I don't think Dame and Steph and Clay are messing up the game. If you put in the work, shoot the three. Alex know when I worked with Andrew, I was like, hey, you're gonna shoot this three, shoot it with confidence, put it up. And so for our team, we encourage all our kids to shoot threes if they put in the work. So if we haven't seen you put in work, they go to pull up a three, I'm taking it off the game, like, why'd you shoot that? Well, I was open. Well, have you put in 500 shots to make sure that you have a chance to make that? No, take a seat. So it goes back to, I think a lot of novice basketball players are like, oh, I'm gonna shoot a three, don't wanna be like Steph. But the real basketball player, they know I gotta make X amount of threes for me to be a good three-point shooter. And if I'm a good three-point shooter, which is what I teach my kids, if you can shoot the three, 3 feet off the line, that opens up driving lane for you to get layups. So at our school, after a certain period of makes, we tell our better shooters, you got to back up off that line. Don't shoot on the three-point line. Just back up off the line, get about 3 or 4 feet behind the line. And when I say feet, I mean they measure off the feet, not 3 or 4, really. But also with the college game, three-point line expanding back a couple of years ago, I'm trying to get my kids ready that are going to play Division I, Division II, NAIA, JC basketball, get them to shoot that deep as opposed to the high school three, because nobody shoots high school three except high school players. If they're trying to be a college player, you have to shoot deep.
Mm-hmm. And sort of going along this sort of this talk of, you know, changing in youth basketball culture, and, you know, you've been high school coach for more than 20 years at this point. How have you seen just the sort of the general culture around youth basketball, high school basketball, travel basketball? How have you changed? Because we've heard people say, you know, like, oh, you know, RAU teams used to hate each other, but now everyone's friends on these circuits. Like, how have you seen these, how have you seen sort of the competition and the ways that these teams work? Have you seen that change?
Well, for years, I really hated AAU basketball. Even now, I really don't like it that much. Only reason I do it is because my younger kids wanted to have a good experience of AAU basketball. And that's why I hated AAU basketball, because it was a bad experience for kids. Kids didn't understand you have to get better. They just thought, I just play games, I get better. Now you have to put in work. You have to put in 1,000 dribbles. You have to put in 1,000 defensive slides, 1,000 made jumps before you start to get better. And I think previous kids just played, and it's like, oh, it's just going to happen. With our kids, we sold to our AAU kids, we're not going to win a lot of games. We're going to get you better so that you'll make your junior high school team, you'll make your high school team, you'll have good fundamentals, and we have good parents that have bought into it. Whereas other parents are like, well, if you're not winning, we're going to go play for that team over here so we can win. Well, you're winning at a sixth grade tournament. What is that really going to translate to? You know, as far as, you know, playing on the same AAU team, and they're saying that people hated each other when they played and now they're friends. I mean, it's the nature of the beast. You see somebody enough times on the court, you beat them, they beat you. After a while, you're going to have respect for that person. I think that's what people are missing out on. It's not so much that I like him and we're friends. I respect him as a basketball player and hopefully as a person.
It's now, obviously, you know, I personally, I mean, this is the first time that we've spoken. I really admire your, you know, the guidelines you adhere to, and like how strict and disciplined that you are, and the way you try and pass it off to your players. But again, obviously, like we said before, you know, not all coaches are like that. And so to stick with AAU, I think that, you know, there's plenty of stories out there about, you know, coach trying to coddle the star player or like latch on, you know, to try and get a coaching job wherever that player goes to school, or to like, the player will say, oh, I'll come to Duke or whatever, or whatever, you know, Carolina or whatever, if my coach can come on and be like my trainer or whatever. Do you see a lot of coddling? Do you see it maybe be detrimental to players sometimes? And do you think AAU is just in general been like negatively affected by that sort of mindset?
Well, I think, let me say yes, and it's not only on the AAU circuit, it's also in the high school circuit. I've seen players come to games late, like we're in warm-ups, and they're walking in and going to change, and they start the game. I'm like, what are you setting this player up for? If he makes it to college, can you imagine you're getting a $40,000 scholarship and you're late to a game? They're not going to play you. As a matter of fact, they'll probably send you home. So we try to set that precedent, like I said, on all of our levels. Hey, be on time, be ahead of the schedule. So they say be there at 10, be there at 9:45, so that you'll never be accused of being late. Dame actually had a story about that his freshman year. I'll get back to the rest of the question. His freshman year at Weaver, he's like, they call me Watkins. All my kids call me Watkins. Hey, Watkins, these cats are tripping. I'm like, well, what do you mean? They're late to workouts. They're late to study hall. And I was like, well, what are you late to? Nothing. I learned. Be on time. So I'm like, so you're good? Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm just amazed that this many people are late like that. I was like, that's the culture that they came from. That's not the culture that you came from. Your mom and dad instilled to you being on time. We reinforced that. So you come from a different culture. And I think he appreciates that, and he still has that. But also, all the kids that go through our program understand there's a culture with being an Oakland High Wildcat. Coaches know that also. Well, if you come from Oakland High, you're going to be on time. You're coaching. You're going to be respected. And it's the same thing with my AAU team. And going back, what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
I think it was just about coddling.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm sure you've heard plenty of stories or seen examples. Yeah.
Oh, I've had actually kids try to get me to coddle them. My AAU team last summer, they were like, we need to have a meeting, coach. Okay, let's go have this meeting. So in the meeting, well, we feel that we don't run enough. We feel we don't do this enough. And we're thinking about going to another program. And it was really two kids that were thinking about doing it. And so I said, well, I'm going to be honest with you. If you want to go to that program, you should go to that program. And I'm going to tell you the truth. If you want to go to that program, I want you to go to that program. Because I only want kids here that want to play for me, that want to do what I ask them. I'm like, so these two things that you're bringing up, does that make them better than you? Well, we don't know. I'm like, so you're just going off that they're running more liners than you. But why do we need to run liners if we practice harder than you? I'm demanding guys in practice. I don't have to run you in the ground. If you're running the drill hard, that's our conditioning right there. Long story short, one kid left, the other kid stayed. And the kid that stayed, father, and this is the other thing about AAU sports, if you have good parents, you're going to make a good decision. So when I went to the dad and said, hey, your son wants to transfer. I mean, your son wants to go to this other team and play. He looked at me and laughed. He's like, well, how is he going to get to practice? Because I'm only bringing him to Wildcats practice. So I don't know how he's going to get to the other practice. He's like, I invested in you guys. I believe in what you guys are doing. So if he's going to go play for the other team, I don't know how he's going to do it. And the kid ended up sticking around and got better and everything. But it was one of those things like, well, we want to call the shots. Well, you need to go over there where you can call the shots. Not calling the shots.
I'll be right back with more Good Take in just a minute. Stay tuned. Be sure to check out Good Take with Alex Hutton and Zevin Schuster on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else podcasts are available.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at AlexHutton35. That's Alex Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N 35. And at ZShust9, that's Z-S-H-U-S-T-9. And please follow us, spread our work, and we hope to see you back here again soon. Thanks so much.
Now back to the show. Welcome back into the Good Take podcast. We are joined once again by Rolando Watkins. Something we were both interested in is, how much do you pay attention sort of nationally to youth basketball, high school basketball prospects, things like that?
When I was a younger coach, I used to pay attention to it a lot. Now I don't pay attention to it as much. I'm so focused on my kids. And also, when I was a younger coach, I had national ranked players. So I wanted to see the players that were ranked on par with them or the ones that were supposedly better than them. And so now I'm more focused on getting my kids to the point where they're included. when I had the Allende Ibaka's, he was going to get a scholarship. Dame was going to get a scholarship. Jabari, TJ, Dominique Taplin, Marcus Parson, all these other guys, they were going to get scholarships. The guys I have now, those are the fringe guys because they don't have the 6'4 build or maybe not the super fast athletic twitch muscles, but they're all good kids and they all can play and they all have good grades. So I'm focused more so on my kids, but I will look at, of course, when you have a nationally ranked player in your backyard and you have Jalen Lewis, you know, it's like, hey, I can go see the number two player in the freshman class whenever Bishop McDowell plays. So it's not local. I don't look that much, but I still check a little. Before, I used to look all the time. I knew John Wall before John Wall was really John Wall. So, yeah.
Okay. Are there any sort of players you've come across in recently who you think are like really names to look out for down the line?
Outside of Jalen, that I actually coached against, no, not in the last couple of years. There've been good kids, and they'll get their scholarship. Was NBA potential? There was one kid. 7 years ago, 5 years ago, Cameron, he went to Grant. He was like 6'7", 6'8", shoot three, block shots. He went to University of Reno, had a good career there, played in an NBA for a second on G League, but that's about it. Juan Anderson, you guys already know about.
Yeah.
He's doing well with the Warriors. And Juan was one of the guys. We go back. I was thinking recently when Juan was playing Juan and Jabari's battles, I'm like, Juan got a chance because he could do a little bit of everything, and he did it well. So, yeah, those guys. It depends on how far you want me to go back.
Okay. And sort of while we're on that topic, you mentioned the G League. You know, there's been a lot of traction and support kind of recently to create some sort of method for players to make money straight out of high school. And, you know, there's been a movement, you know, LaMelo Ball and a couple other players have gone to Australia. You know, you had a Jalen Green who's going to go to the G League instead of going to college. And now there's this new G League developmental team that's popping up sort of right in our backyard in Walnut Creek. Mm-hmm. So, like, do you think, like, what's your opinion on all sort of all these different routes the players can choose? And do you think this, like, the G League thing or kind of money-making, in general, do you think that's a viable option?
So this is where I have to get real, as I tell the kids. Mm-hmm. What's the age requirement to become a professional golfer?
Professional golfer?
Yeah.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Yeah,
both of us suck at golf so much that I haven't even considered the question.
What's the age requirement to become a professional baseball player?
Well, they let you come out of high school, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think 18. Right.
Same thing with golf. Tennis, straight out of high school. Boxing, straight out of high school. What sports make you wait to go professionally if you're ready and other people have told you ready?
Basketball and football are the two big ones.
Basketball and football.
Yeah.
What demographic makes up basketball and football?
African Americans.
So to answer your question, if you're good enough, go get the money. Because guess what? Everybody talks about how that basketball player went straight out of college and he didn't make it. Well, guess what? There's guys that sit in the minor league until they're 32 years old, never make the big league. Nobody ever talks about that. But you need to do 1 year of college ball. Why? So the NCAA can get their money. Now, I don't agree with how LaMelo's dad did it, but he did the right thing. RJ Hampton did the right thing. You know, Brandon Jennings, for what they're going to, they did the right thing. Some of these kids, that 1 year, they can make more money than their parents have made in the last 5 years. Why do I need to go to college so that the university can make more money off of me? And they're not even teaching me that. Most kids that go one and done, they don't even go to class. First semester they fail, second semester they're on academic probation. Well, guess what happens in that second semester? The NBA draft. So I don't care anyway. So it's just a way for the NC2A to get money off of these kids. So if you're good enough, go make your money. If you need some seasoning, go to college for a year or two. Try to get that education. I think everybody should get an education. But when you're looking at socioeconomic disadvantage, hey, I live in a one-bedroom apartment with my mom, my two sisters, and my brother. Don't have a dad in my life, but they're telling me I'm going to be a first-round pick. Why am I going to go to college? I can go to G League. If you're that high, you know, if you're the top 5, 10, they'll take you to G League, and you can make a couple hundred thousand. There's no need for you to go to college. So, once again, if you're good enough, go. If you're not good enough, go to college.
Yeah, I know. I cannot begin to say how much I agree. I mean, obviously California just signed the Newsom actually signed it on LeBron's show on HBO, you know, allowing athletes to be paid. So I really hope. I think what would solve the problem is if athletes could actually, you know, make money off their name and likeness. That way the NCAA could have it both ways. If you want them to come to college, you have to at least meet them halfway, at least a little. I was curious. I mean, you know, you mentioned the NBA bubble, how much is entertaining you. It's been like a lifesaver for me to actually have live sports. And honestly, I don't know about you. And again, I would love to know your perspective. I've been so surprised with like the level of play so far. I mean, there's been some rustiness, but like, and even like the first day, both games were great. There's been a high level of play. Obviously, your boy Dame, they had a great game against Memphis the other day. Like, what's been your highlights? It was an unbelievable game. What's been your takeaway? What have you enjoyed most, other than just having stuff to watch? You know.
Well, my girlfriend, she was getting really tired of me watching NBA TV and NFL Network, watching all these replays. She's like, "How many times can we watch the 49ers versus the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship?"
100.
Pretty good game. It's a pretty good game.
A million times.
Yeah. The play has been surprisingly better than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I think that these guys realize that they're helping the American public and even the world get through a very trying time. I don't think that everybody forgets we're in COVID, but when you're watching that game for that hour and a half, you're just like, oh, I'm entertained. For that hour and a half, you also remove yourself from what's going on in America. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, those things. So for an hour and a half, it's like, all right, that was great. Then we go back to reality, but still, just to get that little break, because it's stressful right now out here for a lot of people, and you need that stress relief. Hopefully football will be around. Baseball is back. I don't know if baseball is going to finish. It's very hard to see you completing a season without a bubble. And I think that's going to be the big problem with high school sports. Unless a parent is saying, you're going to take my son for 3 months, educate him, feed him, or my daughter, educate him, feed him, they're going to be exposed to outside influence. Outside of the team, you know, they're going to go home. And at home, it might be a bad situation, and you bring it into the team. So that's why I'm hoping that they have better treatment for COVID. So if you do contract it, the treatment is there, so you're back in a week or so. That doesn't take 2 weeks. And you're not contagious, let's say, in a week or so.
So do you have a 2020 NBA championship pick? And a follow-up, please have it not be the Lakers, but go ahead.
I do. I'm going to say the Portland Trail Blazers.
Okay, good answer.
And this is why I say this. The only reason I'm saying if they get in, because I think if they have more time to gel, they would definitely do it. They're the only team that's big enough to actually play against the Lakers. The Lakers have 3 7-footers. Portland has 3 7-footers, all skilled 7-footers. And so Portland's 7-footers actually more skilled than the Lakers 7-footers. They also have CJ and Dame that can take over. So Portland, if they get in, if they don't get in, it's going to be the Lakers. I don't see anybody. I mean, they're just too big. And AD, barring an AD injury, it'll be the Lakers. If AD gets hurt, I just saw him play today and lose. But I like the Boston Celtics also.
I also wanted to ask too. I mean, I remember Dame had said, you know, when the bubble idea was first starting to come up, he was like, yeah, you know, if they tell us that we don't have a chance to come in the playoffs, then I'm just going to be like, screw it, I'm not going to play. So he obviously is high on their chances. Have you talked to him since he's been in the bubble? I mean, I'm sure he's optimistic. I mean, what athlete isn't? But how does he feel about the team? Obviously, you know, Nurkic was going to come back, like the day after the season got shut down, and now he's back, obviously along with Whiteside, Collins, 3 7-footers like you mentioned. How does he feel about, you know, the potential of how far they can go?
Dame is a very confident person, and he likes to defy odds. So he felt really good. I've talked to him since he was in the bubble, but we didn't talk basketball. We talked rap. We were talking about the versus Snoop Dogg versus DMX. And I wished him happy birthday when he was down there. But we haven't talked any basketball. But before the COVID stoppage, he felt very confident about their chances because he knew what they were coming back with. And that's the other thing. Trevor Ariza isn't with them. If Trevor Ariza was with them, they would be even more dangerous. So, yeah, those are my picks. The Lakers, if Portland doesn't get in, if Portland gets in, Portland can beat the Lakers. You heard it here first. I said it first. Portland can beat the Lakers.
All right, yeah. No, absolutely. And we'll check back in on that in a couple weeks' time, no question.
when I wager and lose, and then, oh man. Someone to blame. Exactly.
Question kind of about the NBA more generally. Obviously Dame, obviously Portland in general, but who are some of your favorite players in the league right now?
LeBron, AD, KD, even though he's not playing. Of course, Steph and Clay, Draymond. I just love basketball, so there's a lot of them. Donovan Mitchell. I'm not a big fan of James Harden and Westbrook. I don't know if it's a personality thing or just the way that they play. They just don't play good basketball. I don't think they share the ball enough. They pass the ball when they have to, not when it's the right play. As far as young players, of course, you got to love Ja. You got to love Zion. I'm happy for LaMelo. I mean, I'm sorry, for
Lonzo
Ball. That he's finally able to play with the ball in his hand. I've always thought he's a really good player. It was just a bad situation. And too much expectation put on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. Happy for Brandon Ingram. I'm really excited for the 2020-2021 season for the Warriors after this draft pick, whether they trade them or not, to see how good they're going to be. I'm excited about Portland because now they have a full year with that team. So I want this season to go well, and I'm looking forward to next season. I will say next season probably will be played in a bubble too.
You want the whole thing?
At least the start of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of the draft pick, sorry, Alex. Speaking of the draft pick, do you have someone, you know, do you have a player you like the most coming out of college? And then do you think the Warriors should maybe draft more in potential? Or like, who do you think fits them? Maybe, yeah. What's your thoughts on the overall draft and then the Warriors sort of outlook?
Overall draft, they say it's a weak draft. But I'm looking at the top of it. I'm like, hey, this guy is better than a player last year that you guys said were really good. So I'm excited for the draft because the draft is just that. It's the beginning of somebody's career. And that's always great. It's like the birth of this player. And you don't know if it's going to be a great player, a good player, or he's just going to be out the league in a couple of years, but it's just fun. As far as the Warriors, I think they should go with James Wiseman. He's very skilled. He's 7'1", and he's what JaVale McGee gave the Warriors and Andrew Bogut gave the Warriors when they had him, had both of them, long. Bogut wasn't as athletic, but he was a rim protector. Wiseman's going to do that. And as he gets better, as Steph and the other guys sort of deteriorate, I think he can start to climb up and they can build around him. LaMelo, I think, is the best player in the draft. I really like his game. I saw him play as a freshman in high school. I'm like, this kid is fearless. And then he grew to 6'7". And he can pass the ball. He can score the ball. I like him. I think he won't be the number one pick if the Warriors get it, unless they trade the pick.
Mm-hmm. How badly do you think the Knicks want LaMelo Ball?
Very bad. Oh, mm-hmm. They would kill. The Warriors, realistically, they get the number one pick, and let's say the Knicks got the number two pick or three pick, they could tell the Knicks, we want to trade you the number one pick for the number three pick, but we want two first-round picks from you down the line. The Knicks will do it.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They want him that bad.
Really? We've talked about like, that before, so it's not like it's not outside the whole possibility, I don't think.
Wait, also, is this like Hunch, or are you just like sources?
Oh, no, I don't have no insider. Okay, right. No,
like, are you just on the phone with Adrian Wojnarowski?
I know some people, but we don't talk about it. This is the thing. We don't know the draft order yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So if the Warriors get that number one pick, oh, they're going to be like, hey, we're not going to tell you guys what we want, but this pick is up for trade if you want it. And if you have a great player in your team, we'll definitely – well, not even a great player, a marginal player, because they have two great players already. So, trust me, if the Warriors get that first pick, don't be surprised if they make a trade with the Knicks.
Yeah. No,
so, you think the Knicks would trade two first-round picks to go up one spot? Like, my ideal situation is, like, to fleece, you know, the crap show that has been the Knicks, you know. That's my ideal. I mean, if you're going to, like, fleece anyone, I mean, obviously, you know.
Well, you got to think about that. The Knicks have – Kevin Knox at their number three. They have RJ at the two. Their point guard is, what's his name? Frank
Ntilikina.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, dude. If you put LaMelo with RJ, they're going to be nice for the future. Now, the Warriors might say, hey, give us one first-round pick and we'll take Knox. And now they have another young, long, athletic guy. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Draft Day, but I wonder if this
Draft Day
could be like Draft Day with the NBA. That would be, I think that'd be really interesting. Also, something you were talking about, just to go back to something earlier, it's fascinating how the players you named, like current players, how many of them are on the Pelicans right now? I mean, that is, I think, is really a team that's going to be interesting to watch with all the sort of the young players, the potential that they have.
But they have an issue. They have to play Brandon Ingram. Do you play him the max salary? I don't know. He's definitely not going to get a super max. Then you have to play Alonzo behind him. And in a couple more years, you have to play Zion. So it's like they got to pick the deepest team in the NBA. Nobody's touching Denver Nuggets. They are ridiculous.
Really?
Oh, their talent is ridiculous.
Okay.
Michael Porter Jr., Bobo, you know, everybody else on their team is young, except for Millsap. They are the deepest team in the NBA.
Their player development has been fantastic.
Oh, for sure. I'm jealous of it as a Warriors fan. Are you a fan of Murray also? Are you a fan of his game?
I'm not. He came from Kentucky, and I like a lot of Kentucky players. I'm not a fan, but I respect his game. I think if he didn't have Jokic on his team, I don't think he'll be as good. I think that Murray is good, but I think the center makes him who he is because of his passing skill and how he keeps other people involved. I think other people would be like, dude, you shoot the ball every other time down the court. Why should we play defense? I think he's good, but I don't think he's as good as they say. But top to bottom, that team is loaded.
And then we wanted to wrap up. We had I guess not would you rather this, but, you know, picking between which one do you like more. So I'll ask the first one, and Alex asked the second one. So
okay.
The first one I would ask, you mentioned that you are annoyed by Harden and Westbrook and the way they play, which I am similarly annoyed, so I can relate. So my question is, what drives you more crazy when Harden, like, grabs someone's arm and, like, flops like a ballerina, or when Westbrook is, like, trying to get his 9th and 10th rebound with, like, 3 minutes left when they're up by 12 to get a triple double? As, like, a basketball junkie, as a basketball nut, you know, as someone who tries to instill discipline, and I'm sure you don't teach flopping or stat hunting to your kids, what annoys you more, and the also Westbrook, which player annoys you more?
The Westbrook thing, by far.
Yeah.
Because the Harden stuff, and you know this because you watched the last couple of years, it doesn't work in the playoffs. So it's like, hey, dude.
We're well aware.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, dude, yeah.
And you're going to lose. But Westbrook thing is like, oh, yeah, well, I did this. But dude, you have to search it down. Your team was up 30, and you're still out there trying to get an assist. Just let it go. So definitely Westbrook.
All right. Now we couldn't have you on without asking this one. We have Dame's 2014 playoff buzzer beater against the Rockets. We have Dame's 2019 playoff buzzer beater against the Thunder. Which one do you rank higher on like an all-time iconic shots moments list?
It's easy, hands down, 2019 Thunder, because they broke the team up afterwards. He broke up the team and we'll wave goodbye. Like, yeah, this is over. And they traded Paul George and they traded Westbrook. With that said, I think that the Thunder should buy Dame a car because they are so much better positioned in the future.
Where totally they're making agree. Trade.
So if I was Dame, I would call their GM and be like, hey, Sam, you owe me a car or something and dinner, because if I didn't hit that shot, you would have kept those guys and you guys wouldn't be in the position that you're in now. So, yeah, definitely the 2019
three. They have, like, an insane amount of picks. Like they
insane
they
really... amount of picks. With talent already there.
I know. I mean, I love SGA. I don't know. I'm probably one of the few people who thinks this way, but I would probably take SGA over Ja and over Trae Young, to be honest. And I'm sure I'm in the way in the minority. I know. Hot take.
I don't know about Ja. I'll definitely take Ja over, but I might take him over Trae.
Okay. Hot take, yeah. Then. I like that.
Yeah. I like him. Good player. Kentucky guy. I love Kentucky guards.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, obviously the picks they got from the Thunder and, I mean, from the Rockets and from the Clippers was just like, that yeah. haul was just totally insane. But yeah, I mean, maybe the Knicks will give us that, Alex, maybe, for it to move up one spot, maybe. That would be great.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
It was
just
awesome.
Just one last thing. Do you have anything you want to plug or talk about here?
You know, I'm a real humble guy, so I'm good. I just wish everybody the best of health and we get through this COVID thing and 2021 be at least two times better than 2020.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. Hey, once again, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time talking to us. This was great. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anytime, fellas. You guys did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good Takes graphic design is by Andrew Hutton. Our music is by Lane Loops. Be sure to check out the description for a link to his SoundCloud page. Thanks for listening, and please make sure to come back soon.